safest haven known.
Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Light of Day, coming to you on the Orion Talk Radio Network. It's Saturday night, May 29th, 2010. It's currently 82 degrees here in the Sonora Desert, 11% relative humidity, at least that's what it was at the Tucson International Airport a few minutes ago. We got up to 92 degrees here today. Sure has felt like it's been hovering right around 100, though. It's getting pretty darn hot again. We have had a slow start to our heat wave here, which normally starts in early or mid-May. This may be because of the volcanoes that are going off. Well, welcome to the Light of Day show. Sheldon Day here. We're going to have a returning guest, Gilbert Erickson, tonight. He'll be coming on after the bottom of the hour break, and we'll be talking about Wormwood Science 101. I know there's a member in my listening audience by the name of Lonnie that believes up in Canada. He thinks that my guest may be a shill, but I don't really buy that yet. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, there are a lot of disinformation agents in this field that pertains to Planet X, but for some reason I am giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I do find a lot of truth in what he has to say. I also have an announcement for my research associate, John Moore. He has a new shortwave radio show on Thursday nights from 5 to 6 p.m. Central Time on shortwave station WWCR out of Nashville, Tennessee. And the frequency is 9.350 megahertz. That's 9.350 megahertz. And John's show starts an hour. It starts an hour right before McCanny starts on Tower 2. So if anybody wants to tune in the John Moore show, he's already on the Dr. Deagle's Friday afternoon show, and he has his own show on RBN, plus on the Micro Effect Network. So this is like his fourth radio show now. Anyway, there's a lot of seismic activity been going on here, including volcanoes letting off. We're going to cover that right now. First of all, the SOHO satellite, which is positioned out there between the Earth and Sun, witnessed a billion-ton coronal mass ejection, which raced away from the Sun on May 24th. Now, somewhere on the internet today, I've seen it takes approximately 5 days for a coronal mass ejection to impact the Earth. Well, sure enough, we've been having some volcanoes and seismic activity here within the last few days now, so this may be because of this coronal mass ejection. I'm not absolutely sure on this, but I'm just trying to connect dots here. First of all, I got an email from Margot, who's on my email list on Thursday. She reported a 7.4 quake in the South Pacific, specifically on the island of Vanuatu, I don't know how to pronounce it. But in actuality, folks, this would have been an 8.4 because we're really going by what the old Richter scale says. Again, they downgraded the Richter scale back in the mid-80s when Charles Richter died because they knew 25 years in the future what would be happening with increased seismic activity due to the passage of Planet X. Now, this particular earthquake yielded a tsunami warning, which was issued. The quake was 22.4 miles deep. And then, let's see, yesterday I got an email from John Moore's research associate, Ann Morrison, and she's also reporting a 7.4 quake, which is actually an 8.4, in northwest Australia. This would have happened at 12:15 yesterday afternoon Central Time, and there was a tsunami watch issued for that quake. Then I got this email from Margot on my email list last night. She reports that two huge volcanoes were going off in Central and South America, forcing thousands to flee their homes. One volcano is in Guatemala, called the Pacaya volcano, and the other one was going off in Ecuador, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name of that volcano. But so there's that for you. And then Thursday, I also got an email from my friend John DiNardo on all these frogs that were being reported in the streets over in Greece. Well, sure enough, there was an earthquake in Greece today, which was 4.4, but in actuality, it's a 5.4. And this happened around noon today in my time zone. So that those frogs out in the streets may have been a signal that there was going to be an impending quake. Now, my guest I'm going to have on, Gilbert Erickson, told me in an email that his thoughts on the eruption of these various volcanoes probably comes from the increase in gravitational and electromagnetic stress that Wormwood is sending our way right now. And I tend to agree with that. I also got this email from my friend Bart Sobral here. He's the man that got punched by former Apollo astronaut Buzz Aldrin outside of Beverly Hills Motel back in, I believe it was 2003. But he's sort of a close friend of mine, and he keeps a close eye on my information that I put out. But he reports, I got this from my friend Bart on Wednesday, he says that the original Mayan date, as in the Nostradamus date, is 2011, not 2012. The Mayans predicted December 23rd, 2011, not 2012, as most interpret the calendar with a one-year error. Nostradamus predicted, quote, by the year 2012, meaning the end of 2011. So there's just some food for thought on that. I also got an email from a friend of mine, lady researcher, friend up in Wisconsin, and she was telling me she overheard, I also heard this on John Moore's show last Sunday, that there was a lady that called in and reported that she had seen a YouTube video that NASA was, altering satellite imagery of this comet NEAT V1 that passed by Earth back in 2003. And this comet, folks, was 2 to 4 times the size of Jupiter. Now, keep in mind, this is actually the size of the comet's coma, not the actual celestial body itself, but the coma, the gas, and and all that stuff that surrounds the comet. In actuality, the diameter of this comet, NEAT V1, that's V as in Victor, the number one, it was 176,000 miles across. I'm not sure how big that is in comparison to our moon. I didn't look it up, but I also seen Professor McCanny state that this comet NEAT V1 was a little bigger than the size of our own moon. And I also have here that it was would have been 22 times the size of the Earth. Well, that's probably the size of the coma, actually. Anyway, I did some in-depth research on this because I found this kind of interesting because, you know, here's a comet going by and there's no Earth impending cataclysms that resulted. But sure enough, NASA was altering images of this particular comet, specifically the Goddard Space Flight Center, which tampered the satellite imagery. Now, the reason there weren't any cataclysms, to answer my research friend's question up there in Wisconsin, is because this was a fairly small-sized comet, and it was 8/10 of an astronomical unit away from Earth. That was its closest approach to Earth on December 24th, 2002. The tail was approximately 3 to 4 million miles. This particular comet had a 37,000-year orbit, and it was discovered by NASA's Near-Earth Asteroid Tracking Program run by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, on November 6, 2002. At that time, it was 25,000 times fainter than the human eye can perceive. That's another thing with these comets, is they're surrounded by massive dust clouds that prevent the human naked eye from easily viewing them. Well, this comet passed the sun on February 18th of 2003. I'm just trying to figure out here why NASA was altering the images. The reason NASA was altering the satellite images is because they realize they are seeing data that would confirm Professor McCanny's plasma discharge comet model and disprove NASA's dirty snowball comet model. I would encourage folks to become a student of Professor McCanny's, like John Moore would state so often on his shows, because you can actually learn a lot from McCanny, even though I do think that he is putting out some disinformation. I hate to say that on the air here, but because he says that there's literally thousands of Planet X type objects out there, which would, you know, tell folks that, you know, there is no Planet X because there's thousands of other ones out there. That's just my opinion on it. Trying to get over a cold. I've had a cold here for, God, almost 2 weeks now. And I'm a smoker, so the smoking definitely doesn't help at all. But anyway, on this Professor McCanny thing here, you know, he was stating on his own shows back in 2004 that there was this Planet X object was coming into our solar system, and he's been denying this. Well, folks, I have a clip here that Professor McCanny did on the Cutting Edge TV show, which is based out of Tucson here, back in May 2004. And he can't sue me for this if I'm going to play this, because this is on somebody else's show. And if you're out there listening, Professor McCanny, just to remind you, if you go to the Cornell University website, there is a copyright fair usage notice about what can be played. And I've been talking to my friend John DiNardo about this, and we are allowed to play these things. So I'm going to let you folks hear what McCanny said back in, on this Cutting Edge TV show, so you can hear it for yourself, because he's now denying this. Here it comes, folks. Stay tuned.
We are now aware of a very large object that is coming into the solar system, and there seems to be a historical recurrence of this object. There is an object right now moving into our solar system, and this information is being kept from the public. There's an indication that we have from many factors. I've watched comets coming in from the southern region of the solar system, hitting the sun, causing tremendous solar flaring, and the indication from all that we're seeing is that there is a big object moving into the solar system from the south. The point is that we know for a fact, from observing other incidents, that the astronomy community is not going to tell you about impending disaster. In fact, they're under direct orders not to tell you. We know there's tremendous equipment that has the ability to observe this object. In fact, an entire entourage of objects coming into our solar system.
Well, there you go, folks. So there's a... That's right, raw, right from Professor McCanny's own mouth. It's a shame that this object could potentially kill billions of people, and here Professor McCanny wants is more concerned about his copyrighted material. I think it's more imperative that he get the information out that Wormwood is indeed coming into our system. The reason probably why he wants to talk indifferently about this now is because his life has either been threatened or his whatever. Anyway, we'll get off of that. I got a heads up here from John DiNardo yesterday morning. Emails entitled "Earthquakes Exploding All Over." I'll just read his email. Folks, do you realize that around 8 years ago, a magnitude 6.0 earthquake would occur about once every 6 months? And back in the 90s and 80s, 6.0 magnitude quakes were even less frequent. And they have also doctored the magnitude measurement standards so as to deceitfully diminish the reported power of earthquakes. Why would they lie to downplay earthquake power? It's because the ruling elite are very concerned about the public becoming alarmed over this very alarming decades-long crescendo in earthquake power. Gives a link to go to the history or the latest weekly earthquake report from the U.S. Geological Survey. And he goes on that this is the greatest case of genocide. This is the greatest case of genocide in the history of the world because to deny people knowledge of perils to their lives is to be complicitous in their deaths. This latest USGS report shows earthquakes exploding with such frequency and intensity that even their inept falsification and deafening silence cannot hide the burgeoning dinosaur bursting out from the basement and up through the living room floor. So I appreciate that email from John DiNardo. We're going to be going to a break here in about 4 or 5 minutes. I'm going to wrap my stuff up here by reading an email from Lonnie up in Canada. This is really interesting, but he connects the dots here with how Bill Cooper, former radio talk show host Bill Cooper, become extremely close to discovering Planet X in his research. And if you folks want to go on YouTube, you can listen to the entirety of this YouTube Bill Cooper episode. It's called America's Assignment with Destiny. I'm just going to start reading this email from Lonnie here. I find this very interesting. This may be one of the biggest secrets being withheld from the public, folks, is the passage of comets. And I've come to this conclusion here within probably the last week or two that this is what the great mystery religion of Babylon, what that secret really was. Anyway, on to the email. Sheldon, Cooper was detailing how the history was completely wrong, noting that there were people there in the Americas long before Columbus discovered it. It's interesting, Mr. Cooper titled that three-hour series America's Assignment. Kind of proof he was trying to figure out what was wrong with its history. If I recall, Mr. Cooper said it was rediscovered. That's an important revelation. Also, he definitely went into a bit of detail that the elites in Central/South America were worshipping the same mystery school practices/knowledge as ancient Egypt. At the same time, he made a point of emphasizing that that was a big clue. Now, you can see that Mr. Cooper clearly is interested in figuring out the true history, piecing together the fact that they are hiding something big in our history. You can tell Mr. Cooper's trying to piece together the puzzle as to what it was. He knows it's the same group of people throughout the ages, and he did nail Zionism as the top dog. Listen to God Makers for evidence of that. He knows something big happened in history, and seems to me he's realizing this something big is the mystery school teaching when it comes right down to it. He was trying to find out what that was. Again, throughout his research, he makes observation of the elite's references slash worship of the sun in astrology. He was connecting this with our true history piece by piece. Given that he was murdered in 2001 and Professor McCanny was really starting to make waves about that time, breaking away from the Millennium group that he was part of and starting his own site slash lectures, that's McCanny, folks, it was a very short gap between Cooper's research and McCanny's. Bill Cooper was looking in that direction. Frankly, McCanny seemed to be looking in Cooper's direction at about that time as well when you listen to his early stuff. McCanny seemed to be fully accepting the hidden hand right about then. IMO, whatever IMO, I see that a lot in emails, but I don't know what IMO means. Can you see what I'm saying here? Bill Cooper was about to connect Zionism and comets in our history. Think about it. Just like Christ, he was exposing these people all day long and for years. Christ said comets. Dead. I don't understand that. Cooper was right on the verge, but had a way bigger audience. Notice how McCanny never says Zionist or Zionist Jews. You can tell he knows, though, by the way he references them. McCanny clearly realizes the danger of publicly connecting the two. John Moore won't touch it either. I know because I've called his show and brought it up 3 times over the last 2 to 3 years. John Moore basically goes silent when you say it, stops at Zionism. Cooper would not have kept the connection quite. Lonnie. Well, folks, there's the bottom of the hour break. I'm going to wrap up Lonnie's other email here after the break. So stay tuned. You're listening to The Light of Day on Orion.
Speech guaranteed. You're listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to The Light of Day. Coming to you live on the Orion Talk Radio Network, Saturday night, May 29th, 2010. To my Mr. Producer out there, I'd appreciate it if you'd sort of toss around the bumper music. I've been hearing the Maniac song for the last 3 weeks. Anyway, back to this email that Lonnie sent from Canada about how close Bill Cooper was on connecting the dots to the secret history of the passage of comets into our solar system. I got this from Lonnie on May 20th. Sheldon, right off the top of hour 3 of that America's Assignment with Destiny episode, Mr. Cooper is talking of the phoenix symbol of the mystery schools and that it's thought the American eagle was originally a phoenix and how one of the things it represents is death and rebirth, resurrection or reincarnation. Now, you and I know that what that all represents and went through, the process of discovering it, Cooper was right there. He starts talking about the serpent god of India and ancient Egyptians, etc. He mentions that the serpent plume god is a symbol of the mystery schools. He was one step away that the mystery is knowledge of a comet being our true history. He notes that these same symbols are all over the world up to this day, indicating they mean something very important. I just want to interject, folks, here by just a thought that came to my mind, but a thought just occurred to me here. You know, we have all these ancient tablets and that shows that these people in the past went out of their way to inscript things like comets and shooting stars onto rock. So for those of you out there that think so, it's got to be Project Harp or whatever, just keep that in mind, that these objects have apparently passed us in our past, and they were a very great concern to ancient peoples. It's interesting, back to the email, it's interesting that Mr. Cooper notes, quote, "It appears that all tribes appear to be controlled by these secret societies, just as our modern society is controlled by the mysteries today. Years ago, I made the same observation and was perplexed. How could this be? Prior to the last event, the powers that be had a global empire just like today. When knocked on our butts, there were pockets of survivors, and there obviously were sprinklings of the elites in there, not to mention they obviously went underground last time. And some of them survived that. They would have implemented the same control tactics no matter where they were until they could eventually reconnect, even if it took many centuries. Simple for us to see now, but again, Cooper was only one step away. One half step, really, when you take his incredible mystery school knowledge into account. Now, Mr. Cooper knows there is no such thing as Satan or Lucifer. He states it in other programs that it's man. These people simply had a certain knowledge in which they withheld from others for control. What was this knowledge? Simple, our real history. Cooper knew this, he just didn't quite get to exactly what that mystery was, which were comets. Therefore, this proves he was looking for that missing link. It's just a matter of seeing it for what he was really doing, one brick at a time, and proving it as he went. He was only about one brick away. If he had suddenly stumbled onto Professor McCanny, very possible at that time, the entire thing would have dropped into his lap almost a decade before the Planet X crowd today came along. Now, Mr. Cooper clearly stated on many programs that he realized the UFO program and the accompanying disinformation program were human/earthly in origin, and I pretty much tend to agree with that. I figured out the same almost two decades ago, and it was a big clue at the time. Eventually, I realized they were trying to get out of here in time. Cooper would have made the same realization if he stumbled across Planet X, its common sense logic. Again, he was one step away. Next in this program, he goes into the speculation of plate tectonic drifting apart. BS, we now know. The scattering of peoples explain why the mysteries were global long ago, yet the people were separated by something. Mr. Cooper goes on to ask, was this the destruction of the Tower of Babel? Was this the real truth of what happened in history? It doesn't say that here. This is what has come to mind in my own research and may account. Now, this is Lonnie talking. It doesn't say that here. This is what has come to mind in my own research and may account for many of the legends of all the people of the earth. We have much more study to do, much more putting together of the pieces of the puzzle. It appears to us that at one time all of the peoples of the world had a common source of religion and knowledge, and that somehow these people were scattered over the earth and lost their contact with each other, and lost their contact with the source of their religion, of their religion and their knowledge. The rest of the paragraph is just as important, blah, blah, blah. What caused this scattering and knocking back down? Obviously, he was asking himself the question. Do you see, Sheldon? He was right on the edge of the cliff, as it were. This is only an analysis of one half of hour three of that episode, America's Assignment with Destiny. How much more proof do you need? Bill Cooper was so damn close to discovering Planet X, and to this day, none of his listeners realize it. So there you go, folks. be bringing on my guest here, Gilbert Erickson, in a minute. So if you're out there, Gilbert, I'll be calling you here in a second.
So we're going to give Gilbert a call.
You're listening to The Light of Day on Orion, Saturday night, live, May 29th, 2010. We're going to bring Gilbert on here and get on with the show about the science of wormwood. Welcome to the show, Gilbert. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Well, good evening.
How you doing?
Okay, I was just reading some articles there, and just go ahead.
Well, you had some questions that things that you wanted to deal with. I suppose we probably should deal with some of them. Otherwise, what I would jump into would be some of the things that, Lonnie Totman had raised up for you. Some of these more challenging things where he was challenging me. And so those challenges are, at least partially correct in terms of what's in print, if you want to deal with that. And then I also emailed you some of the things that we might talk about. So what would you like to do?
The floor is all yours. I don't have that particular email in front of me, but I do know that Lonnie did have a number of challenging questions for you. If you'd just like to cover them, go ahead.
Okay, well, Lonnie, this one's for you, bud. He's one of the listeners, and he commented that that when I wrote the wormwood science, I wrote it in terms of gravity only rather than incorporating the plasma science as part of the model to explain the wormwood behaviors that I was alleging would be happening. And he is correct. I started with a gravity-only model because that's the model that I was familiar with when I was, coming up through my days of science. But more recently, what's been happening in astronomy is the world has been changing. It's very slowly, not real fast. The world of astronomy is going to be changing because the old ad hoc explanations that they've been using for gravity holding solar systems together, gravity holding galaxies together, and so forth, basically don't work. As it turns out, gravity is a deficient model to hold a solar system together. So they realize if we're going to base it on gravity, we're going to have a lot more mass in there than what we actually have. So they come up with a fiction, and that fiction would be things like black holes with super massive mass of some sort, mysterious mass. And the only problem is there's not real good evidence for this so-called supermass even being there. One other one is the problem of what you would call zone of validity. A good example would be our solar system. The sun has a gravitational reach that goes out about roughly half a light year in all directions. Okay, our nearest solar neighbor would be Alpha Centauri, isn't it? About 4.5 light years. Just for fun, if Alpha Centauri had about the same kind of reach, half a light year, and we've got a half a light year in Alpha Centauri and half a light year for the Sun, then what we have is we've got one light year of gravitational reach, and we've got a large chunk of 3.5 light years of empty space in between. And we're in a fairly crowded section, one of the arms of the Milky Way. So what we have is gravity from even to our nearest star that our sun cannot have a gravitational handshake with. So gravity only is a model for explaining the science of the astronomic science of the day is really, it's a dying model. But it is the one that the bulk of the paid astronomers and physicists, NASA and so forth, cling to and defend. It's a bad model. But it was the best bad model they had at the time that they were formulating it, and so they still cling to it. And like other changes in science, the changes come a little bit slow.
Hey, Gilbert.
Or if you're a pessimist, they come one funeral at a time. Go ahead.
Yeah, I actually do have a good question here.
Go ahead.
There was a lady that called in the end of John Morris show last Sunday, and she said that she had seen a YouTube video of this comet NEAT V1 back in 2003, that it was two times the size of Jupiter, and she was baffled as to why this didn't cause any Earth impending catastrophe. Can you tell us more about comet NEAT V1?
Well, I wasn't very familiar with it. Kind of looked it up and did a little quick study. Actually, the coma that it was throwing was larger than Jupiter, but the actual comet itself was smaller than Mercury. So it wasn't that big of a body. It was a small body. But that's the thing that happens when a capacitive charge body gets into the neighborhood of the solar wind. It will throw this electromagnetic glowing plasma coma, a tail, and we see the tail, and tail can sometimes be many, many, many times longer than the diameter of the body itself.
Yeah,
this is true for comets and, you know, and other bodies, too.
Right. From the research I did today, the coma was 2 to 4 times the size of Jupiter, but the diameter of the comet itself was 176,000 miles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting how the government kind of wanted to save some of the data for themselves and not share the goodies, you know what I mean? Wasn't that odd? Of course, the amateur astronomers just had a fit. You know that. What are you talking about? What's all this missing data? You know, share the goodies. Come on, boys. That's what we pay you for. No, that didn't come through.
In your opinion, why do you think NASA was altering those SOHO satellite images of that comet?
Well, the neat stuff was back in, what, 2002 and 2003, wasn't it then?
Early 2003, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Keep in mind, they have a... the best way to describe it. Again, with science, the changes come slowly, and they were defending the gravity-only model and viewing comets as, you know, slushy, rock-strewn snowballs, basically, and that what you've got is ice that's, you know, melting off and producing this massive trail. But that's not true. A lot of these comets are very, very hard, solid bodies, just like an asteroid. Okay? So, to have a body that large coming into the solar system, getting that close to the sun, throwing a coma way bigger than Jupiter, certainly, you know, quite a bit longer, you know, it was a little upsetting, and it also didn't fit the paradigm, of the day, which is, again, is slowly changing, but again, that change, the rate of change, is slow. It's gonna take them a while to actually catch on to this plasma model. That I know of, only one lab here in the United States, I think, is actually doing serious plasma work, and that's the one at Los Alamos. So, you know, it's just gonna be time, it's gonna take time to get used to the idea that, you know, McKinney and the others are correct, the sun has a solid core, just like the Earth. Or just like Jupiter, actually. You can't see it, Jupiter's got a massive atmosphere, a lot of frozen gases and swirling gases around it, you know. But it's got a solid core. Well, the sun has a solid core. It's not nuclear. There is no nuclear fission of consequence. The rate of neutrino production is 1/3 of what it theoretically should be. And if there was a fusion core of hydrogen at the center of the sun, there would be no sunspots. Zero. Wouldn't happen.
What are your thoughts about the hollow Earth theory? You think we really have a inner hollow Earth?
In my opinion, no. And that's a guess. That doesn't mean there aren't some pretty bodacious cave systems. One lady was caving. She said there was a cave in, what was it, New Guinea? That the drop from the, you know, the opening where it first opened up was taller, was deeper than the height of the Empire State Building.
Why are there people out there pushing this theory that there's a hollow Earth, in your opinion?
Yeah. Everybody's got a right to have an opinion, you know. It's like certain portions of anatomy.
Sure.
Huh? There's people that believe in a flat Earth. Kind of a bad theory, but they believe in it. Oh, you got to be careful if you sail. You might fall off the edge. You know, I mean, there's a lot of strange stuff going around. People are allowed to have fancy and theory and, you know, make up stories. And, you know, sometimes the line blurs a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
So,
have you ever heard of Greg Jenner?
No. Oh, you mean the athlete?
No, he appears to be some Planet X type researcher, and John DiNardo told me about him today. I was just wondering if you heard of him.
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, do you think, you know, there's been a lot of volcanoes and earthquakes going off here in the last few days again. Do you think this is the gravitational and electromagnetic stress being exerted upon us from Wormwood right now?
Absolutely. Especially if it's in the southern hemisphere. Or close to the southern hemisphere. The story, the most scary story recently that had classic Wormwood fingerprints all over it was that one about the seabed of the floor of the Coral Sea rising. That the mantle under the tectonic plate appears to be making the seabed, the floor of the coral sea, bulge or rise.
There was an ancient
Maori prophecy that said it would happen. And supposedly that was happening, and then they shut off the data from the buoy or claimed that they weren't getting any. So we're trying to figure, is there a chance that story was true? If that's true, that the coral sea has a bulge under it that's pushing up, you know, near that joint in the tectonic plates, then that would be classic wormwood fingerprints all over it. Okay? You can explain away the volcanoes, you can explain away the earthquakes, except for the fact there's so many of them. But when something weird happens, like land emerging out of the sea, that's pretty strange. You know? That's a wormwood signature.
What are your thoughts about, did you get the chance to hear the beginning of my show?
No. Oh. I'm trying to do some repairs here and also take care of some emails I got behind.
That's fine. I was talking about Professor McCanny. You know, he states back in 2004 that there was indeed a mini reports or leaks from the Wormwood installation in Australia of a mini solar system moving into ours. And now, you know, McCanny's stating that there's literally thousands of Planet X objects out there. It's as if there's a major contradiction. And from what he was stating back in 2004, why do you think he's doing that?
Oh, don't know. You've got all kinds of theories floating around. One of them is that Wormwood is a comet-like object, or, you know, because of some of the ancient descriptions, and you know, that it is a comet, that it's a series of comets or something. There's just story after story after story. The net is full of it right now. A lot of stuff on YouTube. You can have all kinds of fun there. Again, I maintain that what this is, it's probably a T-class or an L-class series brown dwarf star, and that it is, it's basically the second heaviest body in the solar system. It is part of the solar system. It doesn't come into and go out of the solar system. It's the second heaviest body in the solar system. We're just fortunate that it only comes around every 3,600 some odd years, rather than, you know, on a more regular basis. Because when it comes through, it's messy. It destroys things. It's just so heavy.
I can't recall. Do you actually have a date on the passage of this?
Oh, yeah. I was really worried that we were going to have a planetary, ecliptic plane crossing last year. Fortunately, that didn't happen. Like I said on the radio show with George Noria, if it was my druthers, I'd say let's move it out into the future 150 years. So don't have to pay attention to this kind of stuff. But, you know, God didn't consult me when he was planning the universe, so my opinion didn't register there. So he does what he does, and this is how he builds solar systems, and sometimes they have, you know, 60% of the time they have binary stars in them. So we have a binary. It's just that it's, like I said, it's probably T-class or L-class brown dwarf, and it's heavy. Somewhere between Saturn and Jupiter size, maybe even larger than Jupiter, but it's like a giant iron cannonball on a long elliptic orbit. Most of that orbit is on the south side of the ecliptic plane, and when it comes through town, most of the time we don't have to pay attention to it for 3,000 years. But when it does come in and, makes its perihelion flyby, life can be very rough and very unpleasant here on planet Earth. Now, the last time that it was here would have been during the days of the exodus of the children of Israel from Egypt. So that puts it back, 1600 plus or minus? About 1650 B.C. That would be about 3,660 years before. Now, that was the last time it came through. Well, if it turns out that it has a regular periodicity to it, that it's not variable, if, in fact, the Wormwood orbital periodicity is regular, like clockwork, then that places the Noah flood, the episode with the Noah flood, back, you know, double that distance in time. We have to redo our history in terms of how old our so-called history is, okay? And it's just messy. It's a good thing it doesn't come around very often. But it is big, it is heavy, and it is destructive.
I tend to personally think that its periodicity is variable because look how long the elite have been preparing for it, and it just hasn't happened yet, so they probably don't know the exact date on it, probably because of the very
variability on the periodicity, like you mentioned?
Well, I would bet that it's probably quite regular, that it's more like a watch, okay? The problem is, again, without access to classified tracking data and to get a good handle on the true epoch of what the thing is in terms of time, and to get, tie down some of this data really tight, we're really kind of shooting in the dark, you know? They keep that information to themselves, and, we're sort of nibbling around the edges, and that's about the best we can do. As soon as the first amateurs dial that thing in by searching up and down right ascension 18, you know, over between Sagittarius and Scorpius, they follow that line up and down, especially in the southern hemisphere. If anybody takes infrared pictures with a telephoto lens or something like that, they're liable to be able to find it. Then the professionals have to comment, because the amateurs will jump all over it. But until the amateurs do, until people, you know, actually dial in pictures, they can deny anything for a while. And then eventually one day it presents, you know, and it can't be denied. Was it the Colburn that said, when that thing flies by at the closest point, it takes up 20% of the nighttime sky? That's a big body. Can you imagine Jupiter flying overhead and taking up 20% of the nighttime sky?
Well, I was just saying before you came on it, you know, people want to blame it on HARP and all these other things. Well, that's what the case will be when Planet Earth goes past. But I reminded my audience that, the ancient people, they carved the pictures of comets and things like that into stone, so they run out of their way to tell the people of the future.
What was coming, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a tendency in, particularly in the archaeological sciences, the human sciences, well, other sciences too, to believe that, you know, we're the only bright ones, we're the only smart ones, we're the only ones to have together in one sock, you know, we're the standard by which all past history has to be examined. And you know, if you've got these crazy pictures that people drew, and they drew what they saw, like the Norway spiral, for example, those show up on cave paintings all over the place, rock paintings.
We're coming to a break, Gilbert. Just stay tuned. I'll patch you into the stream, and we'll be back at 5 minutes after the hour.
Okay.
Stay tuned, folks. You're listening to the Live Day with my guest, Gilbert Erickson. Stay tuned.
The Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. We have more listeners than the big boys' HD2 channels. This is Micro 1650 AM, Tonawanda, New York.